person's trees, mm-hmm. and the person may be able to understand and see the Buddha nature of trees, but maybe he's not familiar at all about music or something.
Yeah.
But some other person can train himself and really understand music, but nothing else. Something
like maybe it's something like this, mm-hmm. but again, we have this problem because Buddhas, I would say, by definition, especially in the Mahayana great vehicle version of Buddhas, they're like, they have all power, they're omniscient, meaning like they know, they have knowledge of all dharmas and all possible aspects of knowledge, and therefore, I would understand that, you know, again, this is like according to like, you know, the kind of scriptural understanding of Mahayana Buddha is that omniscience would mean that they have, by definition, they have no blind spots. So, so you know, so then why do you need any extra Buddhas? Why do you need more than one Buddha?
Because we're just, you know, human beings, and we cannot be truly awakened because we have a body and person.
Yeah, well, we can't be. Like, a person cannot realize Buddha Dharma. But we could say that the Buddha that realizes Buddha Dharma, together with all Buddhas, is not a person. But it could... well, for example, like right now, our Buddha nature is, one way to talk about it is, it's like right here alongside our person. And there's different ways to look at this strange reality of Buddha nature. One would be like Buddha nature and the person are like kind of like traveling side by side mm-hmm. through this life. And they like, but do they never meet? That's one story, is that person is like who we think we are, and Buddha nature is like who we really are. Mm-hmm. And they actually never, they're like almost touching, but they never meet. Mm-hmm. But they're both here always right now. Mm-hmm. And then you could say in that story, like the practice is not about getting the person to meet the Buddha Dharma. It's more like, seeing through the illusion of the person to just completely reveal the Buddha nature. Like the person, you know, from the perspective of Buddha, the person is like an illusion. And from the perspective of the person, the Buddha nature is kind of like an illusion. Mm-hmm. Or it's just invisible, like we're not in touch with it, except certain times. I think we are slightly in touch with it. I think otherwise we wouldn't be here in a sesshin mm-hmm. studying this kind of weird stuff. I think it's because we're like, Buddha nature is like knocking on the person's door, you know, all the time maybe. And usually we're just like, you know, we're busy. So, like, I hear something, but like, turn up the TV louder. It bothers some noise. Actually, Buddha's knocking on the door.
Going back to the, I don't quite know what Buddha nature is, but the fundamental thesis of only a Buddha and a Buddha is questionable in my mind. Is that heresy? I mean, it seems to me that many people have probably realized whatever it is, some great wisdom and realization without necessarily being Buddhist.
Oh,
or without the forms and ceremonies.
Outside of so-called Buddhism. Yeah, well, I don't think that when we say Buddha, we're not like talking about a particular religion, mm-hmm. I would say, mm-hmm. or, you know. I mean, we have these scriptural stories, right, of like the stages to Buddhahood and Buddha, and even those, I would understand those to be like, even that's not like the property of the Buddhists, mm-hmm. And the story might look differently from another tradition too, but that at least the basic principles and maybe even all the details would play out for someone who's never heard of Buddhism, but in a similar way,
mm-hmm.
this kind of realization of the true mark of all things, meaning that they're beyond what we think they are.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, definitely not limited to Buddhists and Buddha nature also.
I've heard that we have this lineage chant, and before we mention Shakyamuni, we have the seven Buddhas before Buddha, and they don't, I've heard this explained that they don't just represent chronologically before Buddha, but they also mean all the Buddhas outside of Buddhism,
mm.
are kind of part of the lineage,
mm.
or contribute, you could say, to the to the thread.
But the question of could an individual without being physical proximity or emotional or intellectual, any kind of proximity, influence to other who have this can an individual realize it by himself?
I would understand it that, you know, that Buddhas don't necessarily or even ever, we might even say, again, strictly speaking, like a Dharmakaya Buddha doesn't have any particular location or like look like a human being or anything like that. So that if we think that, well, to be a Buddha, you have to meet like another person who kind of looks like a person, or maybe even looks like a Buddhist that has like robes or something like that. I don't think it's like that, but it might maybe that the Buddha at the time of a Buddha's realization, it is together with a Buddha or all Buddhas, but that what we mean by all Buddhas there is like the Dharma, the unlocatable, inconceivable nature of reality, the universe itself.
That was actually the first story, you could say. The story is that the Buddha practiced with some friends, some ascetic friends, mm-hmm. and finally, circumstantially, he decided to practice alone, and he sat down alone in his, you know, in his seat of awakening. And when he stood up from that seat of awakening, he wasn't alone. He said, this is wonderful, it's really wonderful, everyone is here with me. I'm awake, every being is awakened. So his immediate, or you could say his first thought, or his first exclamation of his experience was, circumstantially, I started this alone, and I found out I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of that's basically our historical base.
There's no such thing as alone, really.
Mm-hmm. No such thing as alone?
Mm-hmm.
So is that related to the interconnectedness of everything? Is that why it has to be in the room? Because Buddha sat down alone, but when he was awakened, he realized he wasn't all interconnected. Is that the key?
Or also, we have the Buddha nature that now I see that that what I just realized, my realization of who my true nature. I see that obviously that's the true nature of everyone.
Yeah.
And one version of the story is.
Yeah.
All beings have this awakened nature, but and then there's that but, right? Because if there wasn't the but, then people wouldn't ever suffer, wouldn't even think that they suffer, right?
Mm.
So it's like, but their Buddha nature is obscured. They can't see their true nature, but they have it. They don't have to create it. They don't have to make it. It's here. All imminently available every moment. It's just like right here, not the slightest bit apart, and yet, but, it's like, how do we access it? I mean, it's so strange, right? Like here we are, we could go through a whole life as this person, totally intimate with this Buddha nature. It's not a thing, right? It's just a way of talking, but right here alongside, and like occasionally I get these little knocks as we're going along, but maybe never really fully appreciate, or hardly appreciate at all, many people that our true nature. And of course the whole point of this, the whole point of appreciating our true nature is peace and contentment and love and compassion and the freedom from suffering. So, well, I think we can just keep this in mind. I think this is a really interesting question for me too, of like, why only a Buddha together with a Buddha and Buddhas? Is it just emphasizing the vastness? Just to keep, it's not really that there's any more than one Buddha ever. Like, there's only one, we could almost even say there's only one Dharmakaya Buddha that is everything. And yet, by saying only a Buddha and a Buddha, it just keeps us from the narrow idea that, well, I'll just realize this on my own over here and hope you guys can work it out. That it's never really that way. Maybe it's just a one way of saying that it's not that way. And I'll just talk about, you know, all the things we think about it are not it and have nothing to do with this. And when we realize it, we think, oh, everything I was thinking about it doesn't hold up anymore. I just think it's just a wonderful meditation. And I think we have these experiences sometimes in small ways, like when we, we're really trying to work something out in some certain way, and the answer comes from somewhere else, right? It comes like outside the box. We're like looking over here, and it's actually over here. And we have this moment of insight sometimes when it comes to us, like, wow, it's so fresh, you know, because it's not where we've been looking. And so examples I was trying to think of, just really simple ones, are like some artwork is like has these double images. I mean, there's the classic like two faces and vase image, but I think of Dali, Salvador Dali, right, the surrealist, has a lot of like these hidden images. I don't know if you know these paintings. It's like sometimes two people, very realistically painted, and in a whole scene, and then you kind of look again, or you step back a little bit, and it's actually a face, and those two people are like the shadows of two eyes. Do you know these paintings? Mm-hmm. Have you seen some of these? So it's like, so somebody can say like, oh, do you see the face there? And you're like, you're looking right at it.
Yeah.
Right? You're looking right at me. I see the two people, and I'm looking for the face, but it's like the way that we're looking for the face has nothing to do with the face that we're actually seeing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
And then suddenly we see it, and it's like that moment of seeing it is a little like enlightenment. It kind of feels like, wow, that's so cool. Of course, it's so obvious. I didn't see it before, but it's right there, and now I can't not see it. You know, now it's harder to even see the two people again.
Yeah, right.
So I just thought of that type of thing as like the way that we're really trying to look for something, because somebody tells us there's a face right in front of you right here. We're really making this effort, but then when we see it, it's like that experience is like it's not the way we were looking for it, right? It's like, maybe outside the box is not even quite right, because it's like right, it's not somewhere else, it's right here. But the way, almost like the way we're looking for it is off. And I think that with, in this case with realization, it's almost inherently the case, because the way we're looking is, if we're talking about it, it's inherently in conceptual thought and words and language, and that's inherently off track for the actual realization. So I'm saying, you know, however inaccurate a portrait we can paint, and I love, as you can probably tell, you know, studying and looking into as accurate a conceptual picture as you can paint of these things. Like, let's really get clear conceptually. But I have to remember that that's not it, you know. When it comes, it's like, it's not that it's completely unrelated, but it's so fresh compared to all the descriptions.
It's almost like you try too hard, you know, you're trying too hard, and if you just kind of like relax,
yeah,
it's just right there.
Yeah, yeah. Another visual one is those 3D magic eye,
yeah,
books.
Mm-hmm.
You know those ones?
Yeah.
Magic eye.
Magic Eye, I think, is what they're called. It's a really popular thing maybe like 10 years ago, where you can find these books where it's like there's a painted scene, often it's like a pattern.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And of a scene, and then there's a hidden
it's
image.
It's very obscure,
yeah.
Yeah.
Pattern.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
But there's something in there.
But there's something in there, a hidden picture, and it's 3D,
yeah,
and it's a, you know, the computer-generated thing, and for me, like, I was one of the slowest people that I know to get these. It's like, you're like, do you see the image? I'm like, no. And you know, the more you don't see it, the more you're trying.
Yeah.
In the effort, like, straining your eyes. And they say, the instructions in the book are like, don't try too hard, like you said. Just relax.
Mm-hmm.
Relax your eyes and vision. And just kind of like, and then it kind of like, almost like, despite your effort or non-effort, it just pops into view. And it's like, again, one of those, like the moment, especially if you've been working on it for a long time, it's such a delight. Oh, finally! And like, it's so there, and it's totally 3D too. It's kind of an amazing thing.
Yeah.
It's like the book is back in here. But like, yeah, we're looking right at it, but it's not what we're looking, because that's a great metaphor too, because we're looking at the pattern on the surface. And it's like beneath the surface.
Mm-hmm.
But our eyes are so used to looking at the surface that we almost like we can't look beneath it. Something else is like looking beneath it. It's not our usual vision. So I thought of that addendum to this part. I say we go on.
Good.
Yeah?
Sure.
Last year, you know, we had this study session on the Sando Kai, and it was quite a bit shorter, right? It's just like, you know, one page or less. And this is like, not like we need to have some big gaining idea that we have to get through this, but still, it would be nice. Partly because there's so much great stuff all throughout. So the next section here is when you have unsurpassed wisdom, in this case wisdom is bodhi in Japanese, so it's just like the transliteration of bodhi that means awakening, like the same root as Buddha. When you have unsurpassed bodhi, wisdom, you're called a Buddha. When a Buddha has unsurpassed wisdom, it is called unsurpassed wisdom. Not to know what it is like on this path is foolish. So I just mentioned that what it is like here is Kaz's translation kind of misses this here, because this phrase appears throughout this section, but he translates it in different ways, and Dogen does maybe a little wordplay here. So what it is like is in Chinese is menmoku, which is Men means face, so it's like facing and seeing. Menmoku is like facing and seeing, or an appearance would be another, or another translation would be what this looks like, or another one would be the features. So we could say, not to know the features of, you know, I think implying a Buddha would be foolish, or not to face and see this is foolish, not to know this appearance, this face and sight of Buddha is foolish. What it looks like is to be unstained. And literally, this is the translation: not stained, not tainted, not dyed, like color dyed. But other people translated a little more liberally as not divided, or not defiled. Defiled is actually pretty accurate. Stained, tainted, defiled. We have Kaz Tanahashi's original translation here, but in this newer version, he's, you know, gone through and changed a bunch of words here and there, and that was one that he changed from unstained to undivided, which is really not the, you know, literal meaning, but as far as a helpful meaning, I think he maybe felt like stained sounds like weird to people. So undivided or non-dual, even, is like that undivided sense. So to be unstained, to be untainted, undefiled, undivided. Does not mean that you try forcefully to exclude intention or discrimination, or that you establish a state of non-intention. Being unstained cannot be intended or discriminated at all. Or being unstained is the freedom from being intended or discriminated. Would maybe be another way to put it. So, in other words, we hear about this undefiled Buddha mind, unstained by, we could say, we're having this discussion about dualistic consciousness, so we could say it's unstained by our dualistic thought, by our dividing reality into me as the witnessing perceiver and the world out there, which is our usual way of perceiving, whereas actually reality is empty of this sense that there's a world outside myself, which is very unusual, right? To not experience a world apart, that's not apart from ourselves.
It's interesting that it's stated as a negative,
unstained,
rather than a positive. I mean. I think there's a kind of understanding in that as well.
Yeah, instead of saying pure.
Pure
would be like the opposite of tainted or stained. So there's a lot of Buddha Dharma makes these negative, the other classic one is emptiness, right? Why don't we talk about like fullness of everything? But we say something's lacking. Reality is empty or lacking of the way we think it is, right? It's emphasizing what it's not, so it's not. And I think the same point is unstained by our delusion. And I think in general that Buddha Dharma does this to kind of point more directly to our deluded tendency, instead of, because if we just say fullness, reality is just the fullness of everything, or the inclusion of all things, we could say that, but it doesn't poke at our fixation as strongly as saying actually reality is empty of truly existing things. It's like it's more shocking to hear that, and it disturbs us more, which is good, because I think we need that little like disturbance Because we're not so disturbed. We hear, oh, the fullness of everything is inclusive. And we're just like, yeah, I agree. That doesn't bother me. And then we go about actually not really being totally in accord with that. What if we hear it's empty of this particular thing, or it's not stained by this particular thing, then we can start to look at, like, well, how is it that I'm always staining reality or adding in a, you know, substance into things?
I think in the original description of an arhat was someone that was free of outflows of asurva.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that was defined as staining, but
it's
more like more like a description of in other words, the definition of an accomplished being or a realized being is not what they are,
yeah,
but actually what they're not,
what
they're free of.
Yeah. I think that's true, that anashrava, without outflows, is sometimes translated as unstained or undefiled, because there is even, like, when in Abhidharma, when they classify, there's different dharmas, different phenomena are all with outflows, or meaning like stained. So sometimes I think it's translated that way. And the only of all these 75 elements of the phenomena world, there's only three that are unstained or without outflows.
The 75 dharmas?
Yeah. And one of them is like nirvana, basically. The two kinds of cessation or nirvana.
Space.
And space is the other one. Yeah, two kinds of cessation and space are the three unstained dharmas. Everything else is stained. And what we mean by stained is exactly what we're talking about. They're stained by our, like, dualistic conceptions. So, you know, like, all the different consciousnesses are on that list. They're all stained consciousnesses. They're even colors and sounds and so on are stained by very slightly, if not strongly, at least slightly, by just by our believing that they're outside us. Like that the bird sound is over there somewhere. That kind of stains the bird sound. Very slightly. Even if we're not even calling it a bird sound, the fact that it seems like it's not our own mind, it's kind of like slightly defiles the bird sound.
It almost, you know, it seems so pervasive in a sense that you could almost say that anything that's left is a realization after the obscuration or the defilement or the staining, whatever's left. It doesn't have to be defined other than what remains.
Yeah.
What remains.
You could even say it can't be defined. That's a great point, though, I think a really nice way of saying it is that, yeah, when you remove all the stained obscurations, the stains, which are the obscurations, the divisions, the dye, the colored dye on things, then, yeah, what's left is the realization.
And since it's not one particular thing, it's not anything.
Yeah, it's not any one thing.
It's not a thing. It's not a thing.
It's not a thing. And the nice thing about saying that that's what's left is that that implies that we don't have to make the realization. It's like it's already here. It's just that it's obscured by everything. We just need to drop away the obscurations, and then it's, which is already here, is now manifest. Of course, we can't say what that is, or we stain it again. but yeah, it's what's naturally left. Because if it was like, if you removed all the stains and there was nothing left, and then you had to say, well, now in the place of that vacuum, now let's make
That's import
a Buddha,
something.
Import
yeah.
a Buddha,
yeah.
that would be a problem because then it would be created and conditioned and born and die. Whereas what we're talking about, but the Dharmakaya or Nirvana is not born and doesn't die, doesn't come or go, and is not stained. Nirvana, it's like, and it's the cessation. And Buddha Dharma, right, the goal is like cessation. It's not about becoming something. It's about the end of becoming something. Strange business we're in. So now there's a little more like practical. Well, I think it's kind of practical to say to be unstained doesn't mean that you forcefully try to exclude intention or discrimination. Like, this sounds good, let's do it. Let's try to get rid of all our stains. That's another, just that way of thinking is another stained way of thinking. That we can't forcefully exclude anything. Being unstained cannot be intended or discriminated at all. Like, we can't create it. And then, this is just like really kind of practical examples. Being unstained is like meeting a person and not considering what he looks like. And this is where the little wordplay comes in here, because it's the same term, nenmoku, not considering the face and look, you know, which is up above, you know, not to know what it is like on this path is foolish. So it's literally not to know the face and look of this path is foolish. And now it's saying, it's like meeting a person and not considering the face and look of the person. I don't know if you can follow that. But I think it's just interesting that he's carrying this face and look theme throughout. First he's talking about you have to see the face and look of Buddha, and that's called being unstained. And now we're saying being unstained is like looking at a person and not considering the face and look of the person. We could almost say, referring back to it, just consider the face and look of the Buddha that we're looking at instead of the face and look of the person that we're looking at. Because Buddha Dharma cannot be known by a person. Or Buddha, could even say Buddha Dharma doesn't know the person, but it knows, doesn't know the face and look of the person, but it knows the face and look of Buddha. Also, it's like not wishing for more color or brightness when viewing flowers or the moon. Yes. Oh, just a wonderful practice instruction for Sashin or any time. It's like just noticing all throughout the day this slight or not slight wishes for like the gomashio seems like a little bit too salty, this batch. You know, I wish it was just a little less salty. It's like just wishing for like a slight shift of reality, right? It's not completely just looking at the face and nature of the gomashio that's just like vast, empty light in a bowl in front of us. It's like seeing a slightly over-salty batch of gomashio. So it's like, so to be unstained is to like not wish basically for anything to be slightly different than it is. And that example is pretty subtle, right? Because it's like, it's already viewing these beautiful things that people consider beautiful, like flowers or the moon. But like looking at flowers and like, if it was a sunnier day, they'd be even a little bit brighter. Or they're a little bit withered. Or like, seeing these flowers reminds me of these flowers I saw last week that were even brighter than these. Or the moon is, you know, so clear, but there's like a little bit of haze in the air. And remember that moon at Tassajara where this atmosphere is totally clear, and you know, I remember that moon. It's all, you know, I think we're constantly doing that, constantly like
comparing
yeah. And just, you know, wishing for a little bit more or less of something, wishing for more color or brightness when viewing flowers or the moon, or meeting a person and thinking, hey, didn't they look a little different than that last time? And like, their expression seems a little bit like, are they, maybe they're judging me, their look is a little funny today, you know? And kind of like, instead of like, it's total mystery, I have no idea what their look means at all. And there's this Buddha behind it that has, like, nothing to do with the face that I'm looking at.
So that's, again, paying too much attention to the content.
Yeah, the content again, yeah. The content of the... Yeah, and that's so hard when looking at, like, flowers or the moon, because... it's almost like that's the whole idea of looking at flowers, is it's like they're beautiful. It's, you know, but is it possible to, or taste food is another one. Like, this tenzo is really hard not to get into the contents of the food because it's so excellent, right? It's like gourmet sashimi. Mm-hmm. So how can we, you know, appreciate that, but then also see, like, this, the nature of that, you know, tempeh with peanut sauce gets like...
That was good.
But that the nature of it's completely free from all the characteristics and marks of the great flavor on the surface. So the content.
We're getting set up for the next session when it doesn't taste so good.
Yeah. Yeah, or even the next meal. Right? So, that was so great. The next meal probably even better. And then it's like, oh. Would you like to come join us?
It's so far. I thought you might be almost done.
No, I think we're just cooking along. Or well, maybe we are. Right? Oh.
Oh.
And is it 4:25?
We can go as long.
Yeah, why not?
We're flexible. When you want to stop.
Let's go a little more through this section, the stained section. Spring has the tone of spring, and autumn has the scene or the look of autumn. There's no escaping it. So when you want spring or autumn to be different from what it is, notice that it can only be as it is. Same thing, right? Or when you want to keep spring and autumn as it is, reflect that it has no unchanging nature. So whether, like, we want autumn to change into spring, maybe like spring more, or maybe we like autumn more, we're waiting for the season to pass for the next better one, or we're really into this exquisiteness of the spring, and please, summer, don't come too soon, we just want to taste the spring over and over, like, a little bit more, but it's changing. So it's like, it's not trying to speed it up or slow it down. It's say the flowers and the moon are just about, like, the moment, not adding anything extra or subtracting anything from the moment. And then spring and autumn are kind of like the passage of time, like not wanting to speed it up or slow it down. And I think, we, you know, in big ways we do this, but in tiny ways all day long. I think it's a great sashin examination of just notice all these little thoughts in the mind of like, yeah, like, is the Dharma talk going to end soon? Or let's keep going. Or, you know, is the period going to end soon? Or how long, how far, even just to think like, okay, let's calculate what percentage into sashin we are now. Those little kind of thoughts. It's like...
That's a common one.
You can get pretty exact, too. Yeah, like, yeah. Count the periods, even, and, like, yeah. This
is this
period...
the halfway point?
Yeah, yeah, the halfway period. That's it. And just, like, yeah, it's kind of comparing it to the rest, comparing the time that's passed so far to the time that is to come. Mm-hmm. Instead of just each Dharma arising in and of itself exactly as it is. In a way, what we're talking about here too is interesting because It's not now, we're not talking about this underlying nature that, you know, of emptiness that's the same with everything. We're talking about all these manifestations like moons and flowers and springs and autumns, all these appearances in the world and how we relate to the appearances by like just not messing with them at all. And you could say it's related to this underlying nature or emptiness in that that's how we, I think, tap into the underlying nature is by not messing with the appearances. Because it's, and just like Jero says, like, if we're messing with the appearances, we're like involved in the content of what's happening. And that tends to be what blocks us from settling into the reality that's not, it's, you know, beneath the content. But we're so, I mean, we're, as humans, we're just wired to be into content. It's what we're, our lives are about. So Sesshin is like this special chance to, like, we still have a lot of content, right? Like, all these forms and stuff, but to settle into this contentless awareness, we can open to that which is accumulated or piled up is without self, and no mental activity has self. So in other translations it looks like this may be, you know, why is this leaping to that which is accumulated? One interpretation would be all these images that of spring and autumn and flowers and moons are that which is piled up in our experience, that which is accumulated to be this experience right now. All of that stuff is without self, and no mental activity. All those thoughts about the content, all that has no self. The reason is that not one of the four great elements or the five skandhas can be understood as self or identified as self. So this is classic old early Buddhism. Four great elements, earth, water, fire, wind, is like what makes up the, you know, a human body and the whole world, according to Buddhist cosmology. But the true nature of what is not, there's not a self in these, like, the, if the body is these four great elements, that's all it is four great elements. It's not a self. And five skandhas, same thing. Form, feeling, perception, formation, consciousness, is who it seems like we are as a person, but there's no abiding, underlying, independent self within the four great elements or the five skandhas. Therefore, the form of the flowers or moon in your mind should not be understood as being self, even though you think it is self. Still, when you clarify that there is nothing to be disliked or longed for, then the original face, and again, original face here is the same menmoku, the face and look, the appearance, but now it's got original added in, so which is a Zen term, the original face. So it's, I think this is a Dogen wordplay here. He's bringing in this theme of the face and look of things, and now he's saying, when nothing is disliked or longed for, then the original face and look of things is revealed by your practice of the way. And the part about the form of the flowers and moon in your mind should not be understood as being self. This is an interesting way of thinking, because we might not think, well, when I think about the flowers and the moon, I don't think of that as myself. But he's saying, actually, even though you do think it is self, so that would be something to check out too. When we're thinking about, or even looking at, this is like a very subtle kind of self. I'd say we're looking at a flower, and you're actually seeing like an image of the flower, and you're kind of like, maybe have a little commentary, like, oh, it's a beautiful flower. Be nice if it had a little more color in it, whatever. that actually that's on some level, if we look, it's like that's all about us, our relationship to it. We like we're identifying with, you know, with the flower. We're our identity is all like wrapped up with the flower's identity when we're like seeing it or experiencing it like that. And that's a kind of a self that we're that's being created by looking this very simple thing, which is looking at a flower. And he's saying, but even that kind of simple self that doesn't even feel so self-like, there's actually no self there, that these are just images interacting with consciousness, and there's no...
Then that's accumulation too. It's all...
Yeah.
In a sense.
Mm-hmm. All that's accumulated constructed and constructed mm-hmm, and arising in a moment-to-moment way is that we feel like might be us. Like, I'm the one having the experience of looking at the flower right now, but actually there's no self behind any of that. A lot, of course, could be said about this, the issue of the self here, because that's the key teaching of Buddha Dharma, but
the flower has no self either.
And the flower has no self either, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing also about Mahayana Buddhism. That, like, you could say, well, what about these, back at the very beginning of the essay, when, you know, a person can't realize Buddhic Dharma, but even these Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas, they're said to realize no self. Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas and Arhats are, according to definition, they fully and directly experience that what appears to be a self is just five skandhas and four great elements. But why don't they realize Buddha Dharma? You could say what they don't realize is this extra subtlety of that flowers also don't have a self. They realize that they don't have an abiding self, but they think, I don't have an abiding self, but that flower really exists. So that's why it's a special characteristic of the Mahayana, that all Dharma is not just people or me, but all Dharmas like flowers and moons are marked by emptiness or selflessness. Yeah. And you could say, like, by realizing no self of a flower, then we naturally that... This, by realizing the no self of a flower, then we naturally don't want to add more color or subtract color from it. But you could also say it the other way around. In order to realize the selflessness of the flower, we can actually take up the practice of not wishing for more or less color. Does that make sense? You know, or you could even say not. As Dogen says, don't try to forcefully exclude this kind of wishing, but more maybe more accurately, we could say, just noticing how we're constantly wishing for a little bit more or less of something, almost continuously. Just noticing that and letting it just drop off without excluding it, but just relaxing that tendency to... wish for something different is opens us to seeing that hidden 3D image of you know, as soon as we stop wishing to see the 3D image, like then it just it from almost like from its own side it appears to view. Sashin is the best.